And I will mute all with the ability to unmute yourself if you want to make a comment or ask a question during the presentation. So let's get started. We got a fair amount of material to cover and lots of controversy. So Alan, let's kick it off.
Yeah, we have a few different topics tonight, but we're hoping there's going to be an interesting discussion a bit later. Anyway, to start off with, we have a couple of shares, and these are from Chris.
Yeah, so this one I just came across through Michael Geis. Dr. Michael Geis was he's a law professor at the University of Ottawa, and he and three other people are going to be having an online discussion about three things, about whether the government of Canada is still actually supporting open internet. And the first up is Bill C-10, and if anybody follows Michael Geis on Twitter or his blog, you'll know that he's been fighting against Bill C-10 for a long time. So they're going to be discussing a number of issues on there, so if anybody's interested in that, I'm sure it'll be a very interesting presentation that they put on for discussion. I'll be working that day, so unfortunately I will miss it, but if anybody wanted to watch it and report back later on, that'd be great. Okay, now yeah, Alan, we lost your screen share. Okay, we're back.
Yeah, I think my internet just dropped out for like 2 seconds.
Oh, interesting.
So I hope you've got your backup deck ready.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so that was open internet. Now we have Western.
Yeah, looks like we're going to be having problems with Alan's in. We're definitely losing your audio there, Alan. Okay, I think I'm going to take over. Let me just make sure I got my deck. And okay, let me take over screen sharing. And share. Okay, so this is something that came up quite recently. It started on June 23rd, it looks like. And Western Digital MyBook Live and Western Digital MyBook Duo drives are affected. These are primarily network set storage, although in discussions with Bob at the just before the meeting started, he has MyBook Duo, and it actually has a USB connection as well. So you can use it as a regular plug-in and as an external drive to your computer. But most people seem to be using these things as network-attached storage, where, as you can see from the graphic, there is an Ethernet connection on the back of it, so you just plug it into your network, and then it is available to all your computers. So starting June 23rd, many people started reporting their drives got a factory reset done on them, and it wiped all the data on the drives. And some were saying it changed the default password, some were saying it didn't, some were saying they were able to get in, but it was still all the data gone, and so forth. So some people were saying that they were able to recover data using any of the standard data recovery tools that are available. So the Western Digital official word as of the 24th, they were saying that the log files they got from users showed that the attackers were coming in on MyBook Live devices and MyBook Live Duo devices that were directly connected to the network from a variety of IP addresses across the world. And they were saying it was an indication that the affected devices were accessible from the internet, either through a direct connection or through port forwarding that was enabled either manually or automatically via universal plug and play. And if you remember, I had a mea culpa, I think it was last week, saying that I had it wrong when I said universal plug and play was not a problem. And I certainly recommended at that point that people do not use Universal Plug and Play because of vulnerabilities exactly like this. The URL is there. I'll paste it into the chat as well. Or Alan, if you wanted to paste that into the chat, that would be great.
I have done so.
Okay, thanks. There is a long thread from the Western Digital community, and as of right now, it's up to something like 960 messages in that thread, and this is since the 24th, so in less than a week, a huge number of messages, most of which are, I lost all my data too. There is a CVE that has been assigned to it, and so you can go in and you can find out what the vulnerability actually is. So some of the community messages that were there, somebody said, I was unable to, he went straight home to check his device because he was unable to connect via the app. Well, if he was unable to connect to via the app and had to go home, it means that he had remote access enabled on that device. Another one said, if it helps, they had Universal Plug and Play enabled, remote access was disabled, they didn't know whether auto update was on or off, and they lost their data. Another person said that they were not affected, and in case it helped other people, he said that auto update was disabled, remote access disabled, and to the best of his knowledge, it never had been enabled. It was behind NAT with no port forwarding, so connections coming in from the internet would not get forwarded through to the device, and Universal Plug and Play was disabled. I think if you had those settings on your device, the Duo or the straight MyBook, then you wouldn't have a problem. Now, there is still one caveat on that, is that if you had a compromised computer on your network that was able to see the device, then potentially it could still be at risk. But if you didn't have computers compromised on your network, then these settings probably would be safe. Okay, an update to this before we move on to the next slide. Western Digital has come out with an update just today on that. The good news is anybody who has these devices, they say that they will help with data recovery. They don't say whether there'll be any charge for it or not. They also say that they will be offering upgrades to their MyCloud drives, which are not vulnerable to this particular exploit. And again, they don't say anything about cost, and they say that will be beginning in early July. So if anybody has a Western Digital MyBook or MyBook Duo, keep an eye out from Western Digital on some of your options going forward. For now, I think if you make sure that you have these settings enabled on the drive, you'll be safe. Western Digital is still recommending that people just remove them from their network at this point in time. Any comments or questions from anybody out there before we move on? Okay, let's go on then. So, Mr. Walker, he has an update for us. If you want to unmute yourself and speak to the slides.
Yeah, so a while back we covered the various ways of booking a COVID vaccine with the tools that were available at the time. Since then, just recently, Ottawa Public Health has opened up a COVID-19 vaccine waitlist website, and I have the URL there. And the way it works is anytime after midnight, you can register with the website for any last-minute vaccination openings that come up that day, either for your first shot or your second shot. This list resets daily at 11:59 p.m., so if you don't get a booking offered to you that day, you have to rebook or go to the site and re-register again for the next day. Your choice of locations when you register is limited to Ottawa West, Ottawa Central, or Ottawa East. And most West End appointments are at the Canadian Tire Centre, although some other locations also come up on the site. Okay. Next slide, Chris. Okay, so all Ottawa residents age 12 or older are eligible to receive their first dose. And all Ottawa residents age 18 or older are eligible to receive a second dose after the following minimum periods there. And basically, if your first dose was an mRNA vaccine, like Moderna or Pfizer, your second dose appointment must be at least 28 days after the first dose. And if AstraZeneca was your first dose, the second dose must be at least 8 weeks after. And your second dose will be an mRNA vaccine and not a second AstraZeneca dose. When you show up for the appointment, you'll either need a printed copy of the email or text invitation or the email text invitation on your smartphone, and you'll need your Ontario health card. If you are at the Canadian Tire Centre, for some of the people that might have some issues, you will need to go down and later up a steep flight of stairs with no handrail to get from the entry level to the rink level. Now, if you're uncomfortable with this, you can ask to use the elevator. And if you have a handicap parking permit, you can park right near the entry door to the arena. Now, I'm not sure how sticky this website is and the appointments are about having to be a resident of Ottawa or Ontario to use this website and to get a shot. And although the vaccines ultimately come from the federal government, this is Ottawa Public Health running the website, and they get their vaccines through the province of Ontario. So there may be some sort of restrictions there on who can use the site. Okay. And just one thing, I'll paste into the chat there. Couple of URLs. One is the City of Ottawa COVID site, and the other one is a subset of the site, because there's also a lot of pop-up clinics in high-risk neighborhoods coming up over the next 2 weeks, and you can just basically walk in to one of those pop-up clinics and get a vaccine.
Bob, Allison is posting a friend of hers used the wait list and got an appointment yesterday.
Yeah, I signed up on the wait list on Monday, and I'm not talking about, 10 minutes after midnight. I signed up at like 9 o'clock in the morning on Monday. Within an hour, I had an offer of an appointment, that I wasn't able to accept. And you have to indicate when you get the offer by text or email, whether you accept it or decline it. And so I registered again Tuesday morning at about, 9 or 9:30, and I had an offer of an appointment in about an hour for a window from 1 o'clock to or from 12 noon to 2 o'clock at the Canadian Tire Center, and I accepted it and got the appointment. So your chances of getting an appointment through this site seem to be fairly good.
Yeah, Bob Harris is saying he booked a Saturday evening vaccination shot on Saturday morning.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments about Bob's presentation? Okay, thanks a lot, Bob. That was really great to get that extra information out there, and I hope some people can take advantage of it. So this next section, I think Alan and I are going to tag team back and forth on a bunch of the information that we see here. Alan, I guess this was your slide, so I'll let you lead off with this.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My internet doesn't seem to be very stable tonight. It's dropped out about four times already. I turned the video off, so I'm hoping the audio only will get us through.
Okay.
And so, as you know, there's been a lot of chat on the web and in the media about Windows 11. And one of the things you should know is that Windows 10 does have an end of life, and it is October 2025. So there's lots of time between now and then to get things figured out. And Microsoft's probably going to need most of that time, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, okay.
Now, they've had a really bad bad public relations experience. So this their public relations, that their releases are changing by the hour. So my original slide said that Windows 11 was going to be released, and they said this holiday season, meaning kind of the Christmas period. So people were saying that was probably going to be like November and December. Now, however, just recently they've said that only new computers will be installed with Windows 11 this year, and the rollout of the upgrade for existing users won't begin until 2022, and it will continue in a kind of a rollout fashion, as we've seen with these feature updates, through the first half of 2022. So you probably aren't going to be getting it too soon if you're looking for an update. The good news is that the update is going to be free for existing Windows 10 users. The bad news is, and it's really bad news, that there's a whole bunch of hardware requirements that go along with being able to run Windows 11. And in terms of the requirements, again, they have changed over the last few days, and there's rumors that they're going to change again. But the baseline initially was an 8th generation core Intel CPU, or a Ryzen 2000 or better central processor. You have to have a trusted platform module, TPM, and probably the current version, which is TPM 2.0. And basically that boiled down to Windows 11 was only going to run on relatively new computers. And initially they were talking about maybe 2016 and newer. And for some Surface users, it was even worse. It was going to be 2017 and newer. An interesting thing, which I didn't know, was that Windows 10 has required TPM2 support in computers since July of 2016, which I think is where this newer computers, newer than 2016, is kind of coming from. Now, they've required the support, but I don't think they've really made much use of it. One of the bottom lines seems to be you need to have a 64-bit computer, which is probably not a stretch for most people these days. And you need 64 gig of free disk space. Again, that's with huge hard drives these days, that shouldn't be a problem. but you also need 4 gig of RAM, so that may be an issue for some people who only have 2 gig, and hopefully that can be upgraded. And they were suggesting that you could use Microsoft's PC Health Check application to check the compatibility. But I think yesterday Microsoft withdrew that, and they're going to rework it and release it again later on.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, what's the next slide?
Yeah,
okay, so some of the features in Windows 11, and last week Chris had noted these things. Basically, they're looking at having improved performance, and also, although he didn't say so, they're looking for improved security, and that's all this business of TPM2. And then the fancy stuff that grabbed people's attention to start with, they moved the start menu from the bottom left-hand corner into the center of the taskbar. The taskbar is going to remain fixed on the bottom of the screen, apparently. You won't be able to move it. But you will be able to move the start menu to the left if you so desire. And rather than being able to resize the start menu, as you could with the tiled version, now they're going to have multiple pages. And they're taking a kind of a note out of Chris's favorite, what's it called, Fancy Zones, the app that's part of Okay, my mind's gone blank. What's it part of?
The Power Toys.
The Power Toys, right. So if you hover the mouse over the maximize, minimize button, then you will now get some snap type options, which are going to be quite nice for people that like that kind of stuff. Although I think Power Toys is still going to be a much more sophisticated way of doing things.
I think the biggest thing that will be different in between the Power Toys Fancy Zones is the Fancy Zones, you can go in and you can define your own sizes and number of windows, whereas with Windows 11, you will have a choice of either four static layouts or six layouts, depending on the resolution of your screen. And I don't think that you will be able to come up with your own customized designs.
Yeah. And then the other thing Chris mentioned was widgets, and we saw that in a recent update to Windows 10 where we got a news and weather widget on the taskbar, whether we liked it or not. And apparently there will be more of those in Windows 11. And the really big news, of course, is that you're going to get rounded corners on...
As you can see on the screen there.
Can't wait for that, right?
Well, one other question on that slide. Apparently, some people think that the performance improvements are due to the way they ran Windows 10 and Windows 11 on the same benchmarks. And they used the performance settings on 11, but they didn't on 10. So
that was with external testing, and that was a big deal that somebody was reporting that. But Microsoft has since said that, no, there are a lot of performance tweaks that have gone on, and they are saying that, yes, it is improved performance. They haven't said how much, but they have said that it will be improved performance.
The improved performance is going to depend on which platform it runs on, I think, for one thing. Some of the other changes I looked up, they're planning to have Android apps available on the Windows 11 platform. However, they're going to use the Amazon App Store, and it's not going to be the Google Play Store. So effectively, that means a much restricted set of Android apps. They are promising to improve the Microsoft Store, both in terms of the look and feel, a lot more apps, and much better search capabilities. Now, personally, I've never used the Microsoft Store, or I've used it once, I think, so I really don't care about that. But I've been looking at some stuff online lately, and people think that that improvement to the store is actually going to be really good.
That actually could be very significant, because Microsoft is really aiming the store. It used to be for universal platform apps and things like that, but they're now really pushing it as anything. So they're looking at Win32 apps. They're looking at universal platform apps. They're looking at the Android apps. So they're wanting it to be a one-stop that anybody can publish anything, and they're reducing the cost to third parties that want to put things in the store. They're even allowing people to host their own, I forget what they call it. It's like their own store infrastructure integrated into the Microsoft Store, and it'll be really inexpensive for other parties to do that. So the Microsoft Store may turn into something that will actually be a really big deal, that you'll be able to get any of the apps that you want to run under Windows. You'll be able to get it through the Microsoft Store, potentially.
And in the chat window, Tom's asking whether you'll be able to load APKs, Android apps, from anywhere. My understanding is that they are going to allow sideloading, which essentially is that you download an APK file from some website somewhere, and then you can load it as an Android app onto your system. They call that process sideloading. And he also notes that the Microsoft Store is good for codecs, the codecs used for playing different video formats, for example, or audio formats too. One of the interesting things I thought, that seems to be part of Windows 11, or really isn't part of Windows 11, is that they've dropped the Cortana. Cortana is actually part of Windows 11. It's in there, But now it's just an application. It's not readily, it's not up front. And you really have to dig down and find it, I understand, to be able to use it. Another thing, Internet Explorer, the web browser, has finally been dropped. And now there's just an Internet Explorer mode available in Microsoft Edge. I don't know whether that really affects anybody. Most people seem to have moved on to a different browser these days anyway. One of the things that would affect me if I could run Windows 11, or might affect me, the snipping tool has changed. They've been saying for years that the snipping tool is going to go away, and they were talking about replacing it with a product called Snip and Sketch, and they never really did that. But apparently now they've basically just added the functionality of Snip and Sketch into the snipping tool. So it sounds to me like we're still going to have the snipping tool, but it will work in a different manner than it did previously, perhaps. And then the really big news, there are other things, of course, but the big news that myself and Bob Walker are really enamored with is that when you want to install Windows 11, you now require a Microsoft account and an internet connection. So it's the big thing for me is the Microsoft account. I've always disabled that and used a local account to install Microsoft Windows. Apparently with Windows 11, that will not be possible.
The official word from Microsoft is for home. That will be the case. For pro, enterprise, and education, it will still be possible to use to avoid a Microsoft account. And it's curious the wording that they gave. It sounds it sounds very much like you can do it without a Microsoft account, but maybe you need Active Directory is what might be the case. So if you're in an enterprise environment, yes, you can use Active Directory. There's no word whether with Pro you would be able to do a local account.
And the other thing you need, Chris, is more money.
Exactly, yeah.
Pay more so you don't use a Microsoft account. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
If I may, with obviously using Windows Pro in my professional role for the company I work for, I've been bypassing the Microsoft account. You know, it's never been an issue for me type of thing. Now, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Windows 11, of course. But anyways, I guess to Chris's point, you'll need an AD. Well,
maybe.
Yes, but you still need to log in. You still need to have a login to access the machine itself before you can log into AD.
So, yeah, but they may make it somehow that
I agree.
Yeah, if you don't connect to an Active Directory, you're going to be toast. I don't know. That's just my interpretation.
Agree.
So,
yeah, and we'll all know a year from now.
Yeah, keep in mind that all of these things are subject to change, right? I mean, just about anything that you're seeing here could differ when we get to release status on it. Now, I'll take over here because these are slides that I put together with the help of Stuart, actually. And so there's a URL there, but I didn't paste it into the chat window because the PC Health Check app is not available currently. Microsoft is saying they're reworking things and trying to bring a better experience to people, and it will return at some point in the future, and they seem to allude to the fall. So they're not in a real hurry to get this PC Health Check app back out there. And it may well be because they are going to relax some of the restrictions that are currently looked at in that app. If you happen to have it, it is pretty anemic. At first, it just reported, you know, yes, you're okay, or this PC can't run Windows 11, period. And then it was updated to give a little bit more information, like you see on the screen there, where it says this PC can't run Windows 11, and then gives you one reason why it can't run Windows 11. And I emphasize that it gives you one. In this case, it was the PC must support secure boot. So obviously that PC was not set up to run secure boot. However, there is another app that is available. It's released on GitHub, and it's called Why Not Win 11. And it will actually give you all of the reasons why this PC will fail to be able to run Windows 11. This is the same one that on this previous screen just said it needs secure boot. Well, if you run the Why Not Win 11 on that same machine, it actually tells you six reasons why this will not run Windows 11. So a little bit clearer to have all of the restrictions, you know, listed out in this way. Now, again, Microsoft could remove any of these restrictions. The architecture, the CPU, so that's that idea of the eighth generation Core i processor from Intel or a 2000 series Ryzen processor is currently what the benchmark is looking for. There is a lot of talk on the internet now that most people, including some people who say they have heard from people within Microsoft, that that restriction is going to be relaxed. Now, how relaxed is still up for debate for sure. A lot of people are saying that it'll go to 1000 series on Ryzen and they will drop it down to seventh generation of Core processor. So it remains to be seen. They could, you know, bring it back even to sixth generation if they wanted. It's up to Microsoft. So we'll just have to wait to see what the restrictions are going to be.
One other thing there, Chris, before we just move on. And you note that some of those things, like TPM, for example, it says TPM missing or disabled. So sometimes you may have the capability of running Windows 11. Yeah. It's just that secure boot may be disabled in BIOS or the TPM may be disabled in BIOS. So you may have to dig deep into the weeds and figure out how to turn some of this stuff on in order to make your computer compatible.
Yeah, like the disk partition type is another one, GPT not detected. Well, there is a utility that Microsoft provides in Windows 10 that you can convert GPT or Master Boot Record, MBR, to GPT, and it's virtually instantaneous and it's free. It's built in the box. So as long as your BIOS, or more accurately, I guess the UEFI supports GPT, then you can convert that, and that would be one restriction that would go away. I think a lot of people are finding TPM is just turned off and that they can, you know, very easily turn it on. So hopefully Microsoft is going to come out with a clarification on some of these things and provide guidance for people to find out if it's just disabled, how they can go about enabling it to allow the machine to run Windows 11. So this was interesting. I saw this on Twitter the other day. And so this was Monday. Paul Thurrott threw up a poll asking, does your PC meet the minimum spec as defined by Microsoft at the time, requirements for Windows 11? And it was a 24-hour poll. At the end of it, there were 1,482 votes. And 48% of people said that, yes, their PC met the minimum spec. And 52% said, no, it did not meet the spec. That's a huge number to have 52%, you know, not able to run Windows 11. And I think this is one of those things where, you know, Microsoft has sort of put their foot in their mouth. Some of the other tweets that came up, you know, 2.5-year-old Lenovo workstation had a 7th-gen CPU. You know, somebody said be upset if their mom's 7th-gen Intel i5 didn't work and she spent her retirement money just 3 years ago. Brad Sams, but he said, I don't think this stuff is going to stand. Microsoft is too sensitive to criticism. I thought the bottom left one was really good. The person had no idea whether it passed or not because he runs Ubuntu. Paul Thurrott, you know, he made the comment on a separate tweet, you have to wonder about the psychology of a company that had to know that 8th gen Intel thing was going to blow up in their face, and they just went away and did it anyways. And he commented, granted, this is the same company that released Windows 8. And I commented, you know, I have two HP Spectre computers that are just around the three-year-old mark, and they pass except for they have 7th-gen Core i7 processors. So they're very powerful computers. They have 16 gigs of RAM. They have fast SSDs. They pass on everything else. It's just the 7th-gen Core i7 processors on them. I would hate to think that those computers would not be able to be upgraded to Windows 11. The other thing that I find really a bit astounding on this, Microsoft so far has been claiming that it's all about security. And certainly a lot of the things that they're pointing to, you know, are security related. Generation of the CPU, I don't believe, has a significant impact on the security of your computer. The other thing that I would ask Microsoft is, okay, say I have this three-year-old HP Spectre that it's, you know, processor-wise, it's certainly capable, you know, memory-wise and everything else, it's capable of running Windows 11. You're telling me that there is a security concern that you don't want to allow it Windows 7 to go to Windows 11. What does that mean? Am I going to rush out and replace that computer? No. I'm just going to stay at Windows 10. So they're not making my computer any more secure by not allowing me to go to Windows 11, because it's just going to sit there at Windows 10. If anything, I'm going to give up some other capabilities security-wise that maybe that computer can take advantage of if it goes to Windows 11. So I think this idea of it being all security-related, I think it's a bunch of bull myself. Okay, is this back to you, I guess, Sam?
This is back to me, right. So this is actually this is my most recent computer. It's a Dell laptop. It has a Core i7, a 7th-gen CPU. It's got 16 gig of RAM and a SSD. It's 2016 vintage, which I was amazed to find that, you know, it's that old. Like, it seems to me like this is a really new machine. However, when I ran the Microsoft PC health check, I got the processor isn't supported. Go away and don't bother, you know. However, as Chris mentioned, there is this Why Not Win 11 app. So if I run that, it kind of flags the CPU compatibility and says, we're not sure about that. But the real problem, it says that I don't have TPM, this trusted platform module. But as I mentioned, you know, is that missing completely or is it just there but it's disabled? So I started digging around. And one of the things you can do is run PowerShell. And if you run PowerShell and use this command get-tpm, it will tell you whether the TPM is present or not, and whether the TPM is ready, and whether the TPM is enabled, and whether it's activated. And in my case, all of those things say tilt. There ain't no TPM in this laptop, as far as I can tell. But my machine is a Dell with an Intel Core i7 processor. Now, Core i7 or Intel don't necessarily use TPM. They have another similar, or they have a different name for their version of the technology. They call it PTT, Platform Trust Technology. And there's a Windows application called the Windows Management Console, the MMC, which if you open up a DOS command window and use the command tpm.msc, it will pull up this application. And again, in my laptop, it tells me that it can't find a TPM. So it says verify if it has 1.2 or later and if it's turned on in the BIOS. So sure enough, I go digging into the BIOS, but I can't find any indication that there's somewhere I can enable TPM in the BIOS of this laptop. So I suggest that means that my laptop has a 7th-gen Core i7 CPU, but it doesn't have a TPM module. So even if Microsoft relaxed the CPU requirement to say 6th gen or 7th gen CPUs, if they maintain the requirement for a TPM, it probably means my laptop isn't going to run Windows 11.
Now, I have heard that there's one option that probably is not going to be there for laptops, for desktops in May. Apparently, there's a lot of motherboards that actually have a header for a TPM module that you can actually plug in a physical TPM module onto the motherboard in order to get it. And apparently, it's relatively inexpensive to do it. I think it's like $10 or $20 or something like that to get a TPM module.
Chris, it was $10. Apparently, all the scalpers have just bought up all of the TPM modules.
Yeah,
I heard that $10 too. Anymore.
Yeah, I heard that too.
All right, so if you have a machine, and I mean this is my best machine, God help me with my old Dell Inspiron from the one that came with Vista, it probably ain't going to run Windows 11. So what do you do if you really can't run Windows 11 on a machine? Well, it's 2021, folks, and remember that Windows 10 end of life date isn't until the fall of 2025. So you've still got 4 years right now to keep running your current machine. You will still get Windows updates because it's supported until 2025. So really there's no issue in running Windows 10. It's just you won't have any of the fancy new features, and you'll be terribly insecure because you won't have the Windows 11 security fence around your computer for the time period. But if you've got my machine, what is now 5 or 6 years old, by 2025, it's going to be 9 or 10 years old, and probably start thinking about maybe replacing it by then anyway. The other option, which I'm sure lots of people will do, is just go and buy a new computer. But just before we started this thing, Lawrence was saying that you can go and buy a Microsoft Surface computer from the store that won't support Windows 11. So if you go buy a new computer, make sure that it's going to do what you want it to, and it's going to be Windows 11 compatible. And the other option, which is available, and Stuart mentioned it, that maybe these hardware requirements will make people think about maybe running a different operating system. And you could certainly upgrade your operating system to Linux. Now, any Linux distro is going to be real happy to see a Core i7 CPU with 16 gig of RAM floating around, and it doesn't care that there's no TPM installed. And basically that's my situation. Almost all of my computers, running Linux dual boot with Windows. And when it comes to the crunch, if Windows 10 stops getting updates, I'll become a Windows-free computer user. And the Q&A will have two components. We'll have a Windows component and a Linux component.
In the comments, Martin says, are big tech companies like HP weighing in to push back against Microsoft on making their recent products redundant? I doubt that they're really going to care to really do that, because anything that is within the last 3 years or so is probably fine. It's stuff that is older than that. And so the big tech companies can say to people, either you're good for another 5 years, 4.5 years, just ride it out. Or come buy a shiny new computer. Or in 4.5 years, come see us and we'll be happy to sell you a new computer. So I don't think that we're going to get a lot of the computer manufacturers saying an awful lot about it. Stuart says maybe this kerfuffle will cause people to rethink why they need to run Windows. And I think that's actually an important point. And so, Alan said, you can upgrade to Linux. Well, I've always said that you don't run an operating system to run an operating system. You run an operating system so that you can run the apps that run under that operating system or on that operating system. So I would have a really hard time to switch completely over to Linux because one of my main apps is a photo editor that is only available under macOS and Windows. And I would hate to give that up. Now, there are other photo editors out there but that run under Linux, but I'm not particularly interested in doing that if I don't have to. So, you know, but I think that everybody should think periodically about what is it that you actually run under Windows, and if there is an equivalent app that you're happy to switch to, or a cross-platform app like LibreOffice, basically the same app, whether you're running it under Windows or whether you're running it under Linux, why not think about, you know, switching to another operating system?
There are two things there, Chris. One thing is that when you have a cross-platform app, it may not be 100% compatible.
And no, that's but it's
certainly the case with LibreOffice and PowerPoint and Impress. They're not compatible at all, or very, very slightly. And Tom is asking, how good is Wine? Now, that's Wine is a kind of a... Wine is not an emulator, but it's basically something that allows you to run Windows applications on the Linux platform. The question, how good is Wine, is a good one, because some apps run flawlessly and some apps don't run very well at all. So you really have to find out and whether the app that you want to run, how compatible it is with Wine.
Yeah. Lawrence mentions that to my point about increased security, if only it was so, though he's of the opinion that it's about performance. Now, I dispute that because, you know, I've got, as I said, an HP Spectre X360 with Core i7, with 7th gen, 16 gigs of RAM, fast SSD, and that computer is plenty fast enough for me. I'm not looking for more performance by going to a new version of Windows or anything like that. So I'm sure that it will give me, you know, as good performance if they'll let me run it under Windows 11. Now, another interesting thing is that if you join the Windows Insider program, which anybody can do, you can actually get a build of Windows 11 now. And you can get one that will run under on a 7th gen Core i7. The problem if you do that is that if Microsoft was to stick with their requirements, when it comes to the release version, you may have upgraded to a version of Windows 11 that you can no longer run on that computer. So I'd be really cautious about anybody who wants to join the Insider program who is going to try to run it on hardware that is not what Microsoft is saying will be the official baseline for Windows 11. Could be a problem for you down the line. Tom mentions Mac OS is basically Unix, certainly a flavor of Unix. It's, what was it? Berkeley Unix, I think it was. Hey, Berkeley? Anyway, yeah, it is based on a flavor of Unix. Stuart says corporations love to sell more stuff. They're all just waiting to see what sort of consumer backlash they get from the current news. I'm sure this is going to be discussed for months. And I'm hoping that Microsoft will back off on a lot of this stuff, especially the generation of processor, because I really don't think that has a huge impact on the security of the computer. Bob posted some of the Auto Public Health, about the pop-up clinics. He posted that.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to hit the return when I actually first posted it, so I realized that.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, one other thing, Chris, you mentioned that your photo editing app only runs under Windows and the Mac OS. Does that mean you're going to be changing over to Apple?
No, my desktop passes Windows 11. It's an 8th gen Core i7, and it's got 32 gig of RAM, and it's got a big, fast SSD, and so I'm perfectly happy with it. And even as Microsoft's most stringent requirements, it will run on that. I would hate to not be able to run it on my laptop, though, because the license does allow for it to be installed on up to 3 computers. So it would be a shame if I was not able to run it on my laptop computers. Tom pasted in something about a photos.app.google. So I'm not sure what that's pointing to in particular. And a couple of other run Mac apps on Linux. And something else about run Mac OS software on Linux using Darling. And he also said 8th gen necessary to show performance gains. I'm not looking for performance gains per se. If I don't lose a lot of performance, I would be happy. So if I'm on 7th gen or whatever, if I can upgrade to Windows 11 and it's basically the same or better, then I'd be happy with that. So,
does anybody else have any comments or thoughts about Windows 11? You can open up your mic and talk to us.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. I posted in the forum there earlier today that apparently Microsoft is going to be changing over Microsoft Office, so it's much more Windows 11-like. So the two seem to be going hand-in-hand together.
Well, it's interesting that that's the case because, and I had heard something to that effect. It really tells me that so much of Windows 11 and that is cosmetic things. You know, all of the stuff that people have been talking about, you know, rounded corners and the centered buttons on the taskbar and things like that. I'm really wondering how much really under the hood better it can be. You know, it really seems to be a cosmetic thing. And I think that's the case with Office apps, is that they're just changing the cosmetics of it.
Then why is there a Windows 11? Why doesn't Windows 10 continue on? There must be some reason. Maybe they want to drop further processors because some instructions are lacking or something like that. But I'd like to know what their real reason is.
Yeah, and I don't know that we'll ever get that from Microsoft. I mean, they'll mealy mouth about, and they've done similar things in the past where they said, oh, we're going to demand this, and then they just back off it, and it doesn't seem to matter anymore. You know, it's happened in the past, and processors in particular. There was early on in Windows 10 that they all of a sudden were going to drop support for, and I forget what processor level it was, but they were saying that in order to be supported on Windows 10, you were going to have at least this, and then that all of a sudden just vaporized. It didn't happen. People on the Xbox, they say that they've done similar things on the Xbox before, where they say, oh, we're going to be making this requirement, and all of a sudden it's not a requirement. So I don't know.
To Tom's question.
Sorry.
Okay, to Tom's question, one theory put forward that I read today was that it has to do with U.S. government purchasing rules, and there's some sort of 10-year renewal period, and supposedly Microsoft is trying to meet that, or so they say. Yeah, go ahead, Karen.
Sorry, I love Jocelyn's comment, so thanks so much for that, Jocelyn. But do you think we can just ride this out like we did 8 and wait till the next one comes out that actually is going to have something significant to it?
Well, I don't think it's the same thing as 8 because I don't think everything so far looks like it's not an abomination. It's just strictly around this system requirements that are causing people to say, well, it's not going to be able to run on my computer. It's not that people are saying, I don't want to run Windows 11 because it's a terrible operating system. They're just saying, you know, hey, I'd like to run it. It's free, free upgrade from Windows 10. I would like to be able to run it, but I'm not going to be able to if you stick with these requirements. So I think if you have a computer that is capable of being upgraded to Windows 11, all indications now are go for it. You know, it looks like nobody's saying it's blue screening or it's crashing. There are some in the early builds like that, you know, there's some cosmetic things that are just not quite right, but it's not the operating system is crashing. So overall, people are happy with, you know, Windows 11. It's just that they'd be happier if they were able to run it on all their computers.
I know, I get all that, and I've got a pretty new and pretty powerful computer too, and I failed because of the, I think it's probably because of the TPM issue, which is way beyond what I'm willing to tackle. I'm not nearly as knowledgeable as the rest of you, so I'm left sitting here. Well, maybe, you know, 2025, just get a new computer and it'll fit, and just kind of I just ride over this one.
Certainly, I don't think that there's going to be anything super compelling about Windows 11 that will make, you know, most people say, oh, I just got to have it. I mean, nobody's looking at their square windows and saying, oh, wow, I really need rounded, you know, windows. I'm going to upgrade. Or, gee, all my icons on the taskbar are shoved over at the left-hand side, and I really want them in the center. I want to upgrade for that. I don't think there's an awful lot of that going on. So I think, yeah, that's certainly an option for a lot of people is just wait until you get a new computer. And it will come with Windows 11 if you, you know, wait more than another 6 months or so or, say, a year from now. You're probably going to be hard-pressed to buy a new computer that doesn't have Windows 11 on it. So that's certainly an option. The other thing is I'm hoping that Microsoft will be coming out with much better guidance for people whose computers report they don't have a TPM 2.0 on the computer, how they can actually go verify whether maybe it's just there and disabled, and here's how you can turn it on. I'm hoping that we'll see guidance like that.
I suspect, Chris, that you won't rely on Microsoft for that. It'll be like YouTube University. Anybody who wants to activate TPM will just look up on YouTube how to do it for their particular computer, and they'll get step-by-step instructions.
Yeah, could be right. And certainly the user group can be you know, a helpful resource for helping to find those things as we move forward. But anybody who is in a position now where they're going, well, I don't know if I have TPM or I use that, you know, why not Win 11 app, and it told me that TPM is not there, don't worry about it. Wait. You know, the story is changing. As Alan said, it seems like by the hour, the story is changing out of Microsoft as to how things are. So just wait through the fall. Things could change dramatically. If they don't, there should be much more guidance coming out that'll help people who actually do want to go to Windows 11. Or, Karen, as you say, I mean, just wait for a new computer when you're going to want to get a new computer anyways. My laptops, yeah, another 4 years from now, they probably are going to be ones that I would want to upgrade.
So if anybody isn't following the chat window, Jocelyn's post says, it's a quote, it says that whether it's good talk or bad talk about me, as long as you're talking about me and making me the center of your world, I win.
That may be Microsoft's thoughts.
We're going to spend all the hour talking about Linux.
Right? Sure. Okay.
Chris, it's Karen again. I just had one more thing that I wanted to say, and I wanted to say thank you guys for doing all this research. You've made my email inbox really busy, but you've saved me a ton of having to dig and research myself, and I appreciate those that are so much more knowledgeable than I, going and sifting out what the important pieces are. So thanks all for doing that.
Our pleasure.
I have a question, if I may. Right, I ran that tpm.sc something, SCM, I think, and it says that I do have some CPM. I do have TPM, I guess, 1.2, I guess. But the question is that if I do enable it on the BIOS right now under Windows 10, will that have some impact on what I'm running right now under Windows 10?
I, I'm not really up to date on it. I don't believe so. I believe if you just enable it, it's a secure enclave for things like authentication keys and things like that. That's really all it amounts to. So I don't think there's any downside to turning it on. However, if it's reporting you have TPM 1.2, Microsoft's current thinking is that that's not going to be good enough anyways. So you really do need TPM 2.0. So turning that on for you wouldn't help.
Yeah, my question was more like whether it's positive or negative, whether it would change, will some program or some feature or whatever, will it see it as, okay, now it's enabled, I'm going to change my behavior in any way? That's kind of the question I was wondering.
Yeah. Alan, can you tell me, I thought it was TPM in the early days that that could actually prevent people from dual booting Linux. Am I wrong on that?
I don't believe, no, it was secure boot, basically.
Oh, okay.
I think TPM only works, like Chris said, it's really a repository for security keys. If you're not running any software that's accessing that repository, having it activated isn't going to make any difference.
Yeah.
Okay. One comment. I read that the TPM 1.2 was a soft requirement. TPM 2 was a soft requirement. It could be 1.2, but there would be a warning. Now, what that warning is about, I have no idea, but...
Yeah. I think that's a stay tuned. We don't know right now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's okay, Alan, this is your slide. The details have changed in the last few days, and they're probably going to change again. So I would sit tight and see what happens.
So, Alan, this is your slide.
Yeah, so not only do I have problems with my ISP keep dropping the router connection, but twice in the last week I've seen this message come up and Windows has gone away and says it's going to restart, but actually never does. And it says something like it's a cache manager error code, so got no idea what that is, but... Maybe I'll just get rid of Windows and go to Windows Free right now and just run Linux.
Not a bad idea, maybe. Okay, we are at the past the 8:30, but if there are any last questions, comments, or shares that people wanted to throw out quickly, we could entertain something.
Error code from Alan.
What's that, Joss?
Is there any error code that came with that, or... just that screen and that's it?
Yeah, yeah, that's all you get on a blue screen.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it gives you, it just says a stop code and tells you, sometimes you'll get 00080 something, but this is just saying stop code cache manager and that's all you get. So, I mean, when Windows crashes, you know, it can be fairly limited in what it can tell you because it's crashed. So.
Yeah, just it's funny you mentioned that because I had that come up on one of my machines I managed, and it happened after it came out of hibernation. Anyways, cache, my interpretation of it is basically it's an engine light type of thing when it thinks there's a problem with the storage device. And my interpretation is that if it happens more than once, then it's probably time that you look at replacing the hard drive. But it has to come up repeatedly before you start thinking that.
Alan Stefan put in the chat a reference to cache manager errors, so you might want to look that up and see if it is solvable.
Martin is asking if Q&A is going to continue through the summer. Well, it will continue through the summer if everybody sends us questions.
Yep.
So we'll keep going until we have nothing to talk about.
Exactly.
But definitely we're going to have a Q&A next week. That's Wednesday, July the 7th. I encourage you to read everything you can about Windows 11 and especially Linux. send us your questions and find some topics that you want to share and send us a heads up to our suggestion box email address. I hope everybody enjoyed tonight. I thought it was really good. So thanks everyone for attending and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, thanks very much, folks. And...